This is Crime Binge.
Welcome to Crime Binge,
the podcast.
And this week we're on episode 42.
Wow, that's a lot.
It is. We're going to say that every time. Like every single episode, we're like, wow, look at us going so well.
150, going so well. We're going to be like, wow, I never would have imagined 150.
Yeah, or
50 in general.
Yeah, 50 in general is crazy. But this week we're coming at you with a Florida case because exactly. It's been a minute, kind of. We tell you a mini Florida case every week, so.
That is true.
But this week we're covering Bobby Joe Long, who is the classified ad rapist.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I'm getting into this right now. What's your binge, Sarah?
Okay, so my binge is a podcast.
Okay.
On the Exactly Right Network.
Okay.
And it is This Podcast Will Kill You.
I've heard a lot about them and it sounds really interesting, but I haven't listened to it yet.
I love it.
Yeah.
So the hosts are, both their names are Aaron.
Okay.
And they're both very cute girls.
Aw, they are cute. Oh,
I just exited out of everything.
You just broke your computer.
I did. That's really unfortunate.
Just because you were trying to show me some cute girls.
I know. But anyways, so yeah. Both their names are Aaron. They both have PhDs. They're both like disease oncologists or something like that. Like
yeah.
They're both real fucking official. And I've only listened to a couple episodes so far. But like the first two episodes are on like influenza and what was the other one? Leprosy.
Oh, okay.
And so I found some like kind of cool facts.
Yeah.
About each thing. Like as they were talking about it, I kind of wrote them down. But they also like how they start the episode is they like do the history behind it and they do like first count accounts of people who had it and then like where it is in the world now and how it's affecting the world now.
Okay.
So it's not like super scary or like you're not gonna think that you like have these diseases kind of
right
thing. But so about influenzas,
yes,
the Spanish influenza did not come from Spain. It came from Kansas.
Interesting.
Yeah, so they don't really know why it's called the Spanish influenza.
Yeah, probably just racism.
Yeah, right? And then about leprosy, armadillos are the only animal besides humans that carry leprosy bacteria.
Not what I thought you were going to say about leprosy.
And leprosy is very closely related to tuberculosis.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like the minor version, basically.
Interesting.
And the last one is that 95% of people are actually immune to leprosy.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know why, it's just interesting facts to me.
Those are really interesting. Those are, like, fun facts that I now have in my brain that I can occasionally pull out when I remember.
Right?
You know?
And, like, I don't know, because since I used to be, like, a biology major, like,
yeah.
I love all that kind of, like, disease stuff and science talk and whatever.
Right.
So I really like the podcast and yeah.
That's good though, because the main reason I haven't listened to it is because I thought that I was going to be freaked out if I listened to it because I'm over dramatic and like will think everything pertains to me. So I'm glad that it doesn't do that.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't.
That's cool.
What are you binging this week?
So my binge is far less cultured than yours is. Mine is the show The Circle on Netflix.
Okay.
And it's just so bad, but so good at the same time.
Yeah, it's like that shitty reality TV that you have to watch.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And it's also like an interesting social experiment to see how everyone behaves online and how they think that you should behave online to be mm-hmm. perceived by others. And that's what the show is.
Okay, because I haven't seen it at all. So I don't really know. Like, I know it's like social media driven.
So it's like 10 people, I think, at the beginning, maybe less. I'm terrible. I watched it like at the beginning of the last week. So I already forgot what it was. So they live in this like apartment building all together and they never meet each other. They just make a social media profile where they have profile pictures and then like they make a status for the day and then they go into group chats with each other and chat that way and they will chat with each other, but they don't meet face to face.
But they live in the same apartment?
No, they live in like a big apartment building. Okay. And everyone lives in their own apartment. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's really crazy because some people are catfishes and like go in as somebody else. Oh. And you don't know and you want to try and weed out who is a catfish.
That's cool.
And there was this one man who was catfishing as his girlfriend.
Oh.
And they started talking about periods. And I was like, this is when this man should have been done. Like, yeah. Everyone should have caught on that this was not a woman speaking to them. Because he goes, yeah, you know, my left side, when it really starts hurting, I just have to like lay down on it or something. And everyone's like, oh, what? I've never heard of it just hurting on the one side. And he's like, yeah, just hurts really bad in that one side. And just says like a bunch of weird comments about being on his period. And I'm like, oh, that was so painful to watch.
I mean, like, I'll get, like, pain in one of my ovaries, but, like, not my whole side.
Yeah, the way he was describing it was, like, appendicitis, basically, and that's not what it is. But it was just really interesting to watch, and it was also really easy to watch. You don't have to think about it when you're watching it, like, yeah. At all. So, which is good sometimes. But should we get into this week's episode?
Of course.
All right. Start us off, girl. All right.
So, just a little bit about Bobby Joe Long, which I hate the name Bobby Joe.
Yeah, it's just a lot.
It is. So, Bobby Joe Long was a man from Tampa, Florida, so only about an hour north from where we are, who started out as the classified ad rapist, where he would use newspaper ads to find women that were home alone, and he would rob and rape them. And then he eventually escalated to murder, resulting in the murder of 10 women in 1984.
Yes, he did. And he is, I feel like he's not talked about that often.
Not really. And he's like one of Florida's big serial killers.
Yeah, because I think that you hear the name classified ad rapist more often and don't know that he escalated to murder a lot of the time. So maybe that's why. But all right, let's go back to when little Bobby was born. He was born Robert Joseph Long on October 14th, 1953, in Canova, West Virginia. And did you know that some people think that West Virginia is inside of Virginia?
Yes!
That really upsets me. I don't know why, but it really upsets me.
Oh, it's its own state, guys.
But, like, did you not learn that? I'm very confused by that. Didn't you have to learn a song about all of the states or something?
Yeah, but I only memorized up until, like, Florida.
I never even remembered the song, and I know that West Virginia is a state. So it's just very confusing to me, and I had never heard of that until recently. And yeah. I was like, huh, and that made me think of it. Okay, sorry. His parents were Joe and Luella Long, but the two were divorced when he was a toddler in 1955. And just because there's nowhere else to really put this fact, I'm going to give you an oh no fact right off the bat. Apparently, Bobby Joe Long is supposedly a distant cousin of Henry Lee Lucas.
Which is crazy. And he is the confession killer, which they have the Netflix thing about now, if you didn't know who that was.
Yeah, I want to watch it. I still haven't gotten around to it. So Long and his mother moved to Tampa, Florida, and they began moving around the area pretty frequently, and they would stay with relatives or in rented rooms sometimes. His mother was described as being overly protective and dramatic, and she also worked as a cocktail waitress and would wear revealing clothing and bring home random men. She was also allegedly bipolar. And some people believe that Long was destined to become a killer, one, because he had an oppressive mother.
Mm-hmm.
But two, he suffered from a genetic disorder characterized by an extra X chromosome, and I'm going to butcher this probably, called Klinefelter's syndrome.
Yeah.
And this resulted in his glands producing abnormal amounts of estrogen in puberty, which caused his breast tissue to enlarge. And he actually had surgery that removed like up to 6 pounds of excess tissue from his chest. And this time period was incredibly difficult for him as he was made fun of often, obviously, by other kids, I'm sure.
Which, yeah, you definitely...
Kids would be mean about something like that. Kids 100%. Are really mean sometimes. So, and another perfect storm here is that as a child, he also suffered multiple head injuries beginning at the age of 5. He was knocked unconscious in a fall from a swing, and one of his eyelids was skewered with a stick, which really grosses me out. Eyeballs really freak me out.
Yeah.
That's disgusting. The next year, he was thrown from his bike where he crashed headfirst into a parked car, and he lost several teeth and got a severe concussion from the accident.
Wear a fucking helmet.
This is like the late 50s, early 60s, Sarah.
Helmets were invented, though.
They were invented, but they did not care.
It bothers me so much.
Especially if he's already hurt his head once at such a young age.
Exactly.
Well, just the next year after that, right? At the age of 7, he fell off of a pony and remained dizzy and nauseous for several weeks after the accident. Not days, weeks.
So, like, I can get riding your bike without a helmet because you're pretty close to the ground. But when you're on a horse, you're, like, 6 to 8 feet in the air.
Yeah.
And, like, again, wear a fucking helmet.
So, another traumatic incident for him as a child. He also almost drowned at the beach and blamed his mother for this because he said that she was too busy looking at men instead of watching him, which just like let your mom live her life, Bobby. Okay. Right? I'm just kidding. If you did almost drown, that's kind of fucked up. But, and do you want to say this part?
Sure.
Okay.
So this is a little graphic, but there is
I just read it.
Yeah.
Whew.
Another classic serial killer sign. So when Bobby Joe was a teenager, he killed his dog out of anger. He said that the dog ate better food than him, so he shot the dog in the vagina, which is so unnecessarily graphic and sadistic.
Yeah, at such a young age.
Yeah.
That's very disconcerting.
Freaked me out.
Yeah. I heard that he had killed a dog, but I didn't know that, and that's incredibly disturbing.
Yes.
I'm very sad to know that.
So, you know, on top of all this.
Yeah.
He also had a pretty dysfunctional relationship with his mother. And he actually slept in bed with her until he was a teenager, like around the age of 13.
It's too late, I will say.
Yeah. Especially if she's bringing random men around.
Yeah.
And like we just said, she would date often. But Bobby Joe resented her multiple short-term boyfriends. He stopped sleeping in the same bed as his mom when he met his first girlfriend named Cindy Bartlett, who would later become his first wife. And it's said that this girlfriend was very controlling and dominated his life from the moment that they met.
And, like, that was the big catalyst in him not sleeping in his mom's bed anymore, I guess, supposedly.
But, like, kind of good.
Yeah.
So they dated for 6 years before getting married in 1974. He was in the Army, and he was stationed at Homestead Air Force Base in Florida. While in the Army, he got in yet another accident.
Yep.
He was in a serious motorcycle accident where he suffered another head injury, and he almost even lost a leg.
Yeah. That's a serious accident.
Mm-hmm. So, he claimed that after this accident, he became hypersexual, and he would masturbate at least 5 times a day, even after having sex twice a day.
Yeah.
That is so much.
It's too much, if you ask me.
It's like 14-year-old boy much.
Yeah.
But after this, Bobby Joe also started to have violent outbursts, even with his wife, Cindy. And according to her, once he choked her unconscious and he slammed her head against the wall, when she regained consciousness, he was crying, saying it would never happen again. But then the next words out of his mouth were, "When you drive yourself to get your stitches, if you tell them what really happened, I'll kill you when you get home."
Cool. What a nice man.
When you drive yourself to get stitches.
Yeah.
Love I don't even that. Care about the kill yourself. Like, bitch, at least drive her to the doctor.
Yeah, no. But that's just the control thing, like a power move.
Yeah. But the two did have 2 children together before being divorced in 1980 after this incident happened. And Cindy just took the kids with her and peace the fuck out.
Good. That's probably the best thing in that situation.
Yeah.
So, in 1980, after the divorce, Long began his journey on becoming known as the classified ad rapist. And he would commit crimes in Fort Lauderdale, Ocala, Miami, and Dade County. And his crimes were focused on sex because of his hypersexualness. And some people think that he started this right before Cindy left, too, but she said that she didn't know anything was going on if it was going on at that time. So it's hard to say if they were actually divorced or not at that point. So, like we said earlier, he would answer classified ads for small appliances, and if he found a woman home alone, he would rape her.
But, like, my question is, if there was a guy with her or she wasn't home alone or whatever, would he then have the cash to buy the appliance? Or would he just be like, oh, never mind, I don't want it?
I don't know. He would probably do, like, look at it and be like, now that I see it, I don't want it type thing. Yeah. So in his attacks, he would use a knife to, like, subdue them. He would bound his victims and he would rape them and then rob their homes before he fled. And he supposedly raped around 50 women in this manner, which is a lot to just through like ads and stuff.
And not getting caught.
Yeah. He had his first brush with the law in 1981 when he was arrested for rape and robbery. In 1981, he shared a home with Sharon Richards, who actually accused him of rape. But the police did not have enough evidence to make a charge against it, unfortunately. But 2 weeks later, Long hit her during an argument. And so she went to the police again. Mm-hmm. And instead of him dealing with it, he took a leave of absence from Tampa and went to live with his parents in West Virginia again.
Like a pussy.
He returned to Tampa around July in 1983, where he met a nurse named Emma at the Humana Hospital. And he was there working as an x-ray tech. The two began dating, and she encouraged him to attend church with her. And he would also gift her jewelry with relative frequency, and she never asked how he could afford all this jewelry, but it was all items that he had stolen from his rape victims.
Which, like, once you find that out later on in life, you're like, oh, yeah. Fuck, I have to get rid of all of this.
Yeah, but that would make you also feel so gross that you had been wearing it not knowing.
Oh, yeah.
In September 1983, he was found guilty on assault charges from the attack against Sharon in 1981.
Good.
And this really pissed him off. And so he wrote several angry letters to the judge demanding a new trial. He said that he had done nothing criminal and that the whole thing was Sharon's fault anyway. And this, for some reason, worked. And he was able to do another trial for this case in 1984. During this trial, he was acquitted of the charges despite the testimony of several witnesses against him. And as he left the courtroom, he turned and laughed at Sharon's face.
So fucking shitty.
He's such a good guy.
Right?
Just 10 out of 10. In November 1983, he was charged again, but this time for sending an obscene letter and obscene photographs to a 12-year-old girl. Officials traced phone calls that he had made to the 12-year-old, and he got a really big sentence for this, guys. The sentence he received was for 2 days in jail and 6 months probation.
2 days in jail.
Yeah.
For...
He just sent her photos.
It's so frustrating.
So frustrating. Yeah. And he was also known to drive his maroon 1978 Dodge Magnum up and down Tampa's Nebraska Avenue, which had a lot of bars and nightclubs and was frequented by sex workers in order to find victims.
This is when he starts to escalate into murder. On March 27th, 1984, Bobby Joe Long raped a woman named Artis Wick, who was 20 years old, in Tampa while he was still on probation.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. He was left feeling unsatisfied after he raped her in his car, and so, according to him, he strangled her to death.
Yep.
This is his first known murder that escalated from him being a serial rapist, and her body wasn't found until November 22nd, which was 8 months later.
Yeah, which is really sad.
Mm-hmm. Between May and November 1984, Bobby proceeded to stab and shoot at least 9 victims, but there is a 10th one suspected as well. In early November, he abducted a 17-year-old girl off the street and raped her. After she told him that her father was terminally ill, he ended up letting her live. And 2 days after this, he raped and killed one more woman before being arrested and charged. And the girl that he let go ended up going to the police and describing his car.
Yeah. So because we're going to blah, blah, blah. We're going to kind of go at this case from this point on, like where the police were putting the crime together, because the bodies are found at different times than the girls are abducted and killed and stuff like that. So the bodies begin to be found on Mother's Day, May 13th, when two teenage boys were walking around in the early evening across a field near I-75, and they noticed a bad smell in the air. They went closer to investigate near the construction area where the smell was coming from, and as they got closer, they realized that it was not the remains of an animal, but that of a naked woman. They ran and got their parents, who then reported it to the police.
Which is very smart on them.
Yeah. I'm glad that they weren't like boys who were like, oh my god, it's super cool that we found a dead body. But probably because the way her body was posed and stuff, it would be very traumatic to find that. When police arrived, the body was estimated to have been in that spot for 3 days. And because it's Florida, unfortunately, her face had already begun decomposing, and it made identification very difficult.
Because it is human as fuck in here.
Yeah. She was found face down with her wrists tied together loosely and a noose draped 3 times around her neck. It looked like it had been used as almost a leash with a hangman slipknot on the end of it. Captain Gary Terry... the worst. and Detective Lee Baker from the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office arrived at the scene. Upon their examination of the remains, they saw from the severe bruising that prior to her death, she had been beaten. And the rope used to tie her hands was actually different from the rope used around her neck. There was a white silk cloth that was found under her chin, which they believe was used as a gag. And this is the worst part, so like skip ahead 15 seconds if this will be uncomfortable for you. But her hips had been crudely broken to allow both of her legs to be pulled out at right angles to her body, obviously posed for shock value. And they were pretty sure that she had been raped because of this graphic manner of her displayed body, but they had to wait for an autopsy to be performed before they could find that out. At the scene, they also found tire tracks that led into and out of the field, and they cast plaster tire impressions and noted that the front and rear right tires had a standard tread design, but the left rear right tire had a different one. And an autopsy was performed and stated that the cause of death, as best he could tell, was strangulation and that she had, in fact, been raped. And unfortunately, due to the decomposition, he couldn't tell her race or age, but he thought that she might be of Asian descent.
So the incident didn't get a lot of press at the time, and it was actually on page, like, 9B of the Tampa Tribune.
Yeah, just no one really cared.
Yeah. So a missing persons report was filed on a young Asian woman. It is filed by a man named John.
I think it's Cochran.
Cochran, yeah. Appeared to match the victim, and her fingerprints were taken to confirm her identity. So her name is Nguyen Thai Long, and she went by Lana Long. And I thought it was kind of weird that, like, she had the same last name as him.
Yeah, that is weird.
She was 20 years old, and she worked as a dancer at the Sly Fox Lounge in Tampa. Bobby Joe had driven her to a wooded area off North 22nd Street, forced her to strip naked, and lay face down on the passenger seat where he bound her hands together. He then drove another 25 miles down US 301, where he raped, strangled, and disposed of her body. Investigators found out that she was a drug addict and that she had been trying to raise money to return to her family in California. They assumed that she had been asking men who liked watching her dance to give her some extra money and that she had met the wrong person at the wrong time. And Bobby Joe was working as an electrician at this time, so he made decent money.
Right.
And so because of all this,
yeah,
they blamed it on her rather than the person who actually murdered her, which is pretty typical for exotic dancers or sex workers.
Yeah, which should not be the case, but it's really frustrating every single time you read it.
Exactly. And Lana's boyfriend was also briefly a suspect, but he was cleared as his alibi checked out. And again, this case didn't really draw much attention until 2 weeks later when another body was found.
On May 27th, a construction worker came across another female body in a lover's lane near Plant City, still in Hillsborough County, off of I-4. Police arrived and realized that the scene looked oddly familiar. The woman was mostly naked with a green t-shirt that had been ripped up the front, leaving her arms in the sleeves to bind them. Her wrists were loosely tied behind her back, and a rope had been wound around her neck 3 times. The ropes for her wrist and neck were different again, and this time there was a difference that there was a knife involved, and she was covered in serious wounds all over her face and neck. On a tree limb nearby, a blood-stained white sweater and white pantyhose were just hanging there, and they were assumed to be hers because of the circumstances. Yeah. That's a safe assumption. And they also found red fibers on her body, similar to the ones found on the first one, which I forgot to mention on the first one, but they found red fibers. And there were also strands of hair on her stomach and under her right hand, and these were taken and analyzed along with whatever was underneath her fingernails. She had been found more quickly than Lena and was estimated to have been dead for only about 12 hours. Her autopsy showed that her skull had received 5 brutal blows and that she was strangled at or near the time of her death. She had also been raped. Her official cause of death was asphyxiation and severe head injuries. A sketch was drawn up of her depicting a girl in her late teens who was 5'5", 119 pounds, with dark hair and eyes, dark brown hair. It turns out that this woman was named Michelle Sims. Michelle was 22 and she was a former beauty pageant contestant. She had been working as a receptionist, but was also known to do drugs and participate in sex work. Michelle had only been in the city for 2 days before being murdered. After attacking and raping Michelle, Bobby Joe threw her nude body out of his car, but she wasn't dead yet. Michelle was a fighter and kept fighting back during the attack, so in strangling her didn't work, he began stabbing her. When police found her body, her eyes were bloated with blood. Bobby also, though, wasn't that careful with his victims, so lots of evidence was left behind at all of these scenes, and this time he actually also left semen behind.
Mm-hmm.
They did testing on it and discovered that the perpetrator had an AB blood type.
So after Michelle is found, the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office was not messing around with this case,
which I really appreciate.
Yes. So they sent a summary of the common factors from the crime scene to the behavioral science unit in the FBI. A profile was quickly made up of the killer and indicated that he either had a vehicle or borrowed it from someone. The leash-like ropes around the necks and the brutal beatings were far more aggressive than needed to kill to show their deviancy. The victims were mostly randomly selected out of convenience, and he was deemed to be a white male in his mid-20s, gregarious, extroverted, and manipulative.
And gregarious means like super friendly, everyone wants to be friends with you. Mm-hmm. So he was just like a guy's guy.
Yeah. He would operate normally in society, but would also be argumentative, self-centered, and exhibit little emotion. To keep up with his self-image, he would take on masculine jobs or where his manipulative skills would be useful. He may even have tattoos or carry a weapon as a statement of his manhood. At best, he'd have a high school education. If he tried to go to college, he probably dropped out due to adjusting to the discipline. And there's a lot more to this probably background that we are not really going to include because it's super long.
Yeah. I love that they call it a probably background.
Mm-hmm. So, in addition to the background, they gave some recommendations for interrogating the suspect. And this is, I find this super interesting.
Yeah, me too.
So, whoever interrogates him needs to know the facts of the case and ask questions with confidence. He should dress formally and appear to be a figure of authority, fully in control, and not easily manipulated. He can demonstrate this by dropping facts from the crimes in a timed manner to give the killer the impression that his entire background is known. But, unfortunately, by the time the BSU sent this profile back to the police, the killer had already struck again.
I feel like this is like frenzied killing.
Definitely. It's so like a much spree.
Yeah. Bobby Joe's next victim was 22-year-old Elizabeth Ludenbeck. She was a shy factory worker who wore glasses. She lived in the Village Mobile Home Park with her mother, stepfather, sister, and brother. She did not have any criminal history and had never worked in the sex industry. Elizabeth was last seen alive on June 8th of 1984, and she had gone missing when she was on a walk from her home. And she never returned, so her mother reported her missing. Bobby Joe raped her twice and then let her go at first, but then wound up killing her after she would not stop crying. After killing her, he stole one of her ATM cards and withdrew money from several different banks. Her body was found 2 weeks later on Sunday, June 24th, fully clothed in an orange grove. Investigators said that her body was nearly liquid when they found her. Her hyoid bone was broken, indicating death by strangulation, but this time there were no ropes, so her death wasn't immediately linked to the serial killer. But forensics concluded that all three of these victims were related. On Michelle Sims and Elizabeth Ludenbeck's clothing, as well as the white scarf found under Lana Long's body, were long, tiny red nylon fibers, likely from a carpet.
So there were no murders for several months that could be linked to this killer. So the police thought he was on a hiatus.
Yeah.
And then 21-year-old Vicky Elliott, who was the manager at Tampa's Ramada Inn's coffee shop, was killed on September 7th, 1984. After she didn't show up for work, which is very unlike her, police searched her apartment and found an airline ticket for Muskegon, Michigan? I don't know. I'm the one from Michigan. Don't know how to pronounce it. Which was her hometown and the place where her parents still lived.
Is it Muskegon?
Maybe. Muskegon, that sounds right.
Don't know.
Her body was found on September 23rd, floating in a Tampa River. And an autopsy showed that not only had her hyoid bone been broken, suggesting strangulation, but that a pair of scissors were inserted into her vagina. So just not even overkill, but just like unnecessary things to degrade women.
Yeah, just degrade them in whatever way possible.
Yeah.
That really hurts me. Then on October 7th, 1984, another set of remains were found by a ranch hand on a cattle ranch north of Hillsborough State Park, near the line of where Hillsborough and Pasco counties meet. The body was estimated to be there for nearly a week and had been shoved under a barbed wire fence and was lying face down. Her clothing was scattered and her underwear were on the fence and her bra on the gate. Her hands had been tied with boot laces and she had been raped, strangled, and shot in the back of her head, which was a new method for this killer. She was identified by her fingertips as Chanel Devon Williams, who is 18 years old, and she had actually just been released from jail after being arrested for prostitution.
Which is so sad.
And she was also Long's only black victim, which is interesting because a lot of serial killers don't kill outside of their race. So
exactly.
That's an interesting fact. The FBI lab found red carpet fibers on her clothing, a brown Caucasian pubic hair on her sweater, and semen stains on her clothes that contained both A and H blood groups, which is weird because the semen samples from the other one is AB. But even though they didn't match, the similarities of the case outweighed this difference, and her death was considered to be that of one of the serial killers. And Bobby Joe later admitted that he changed his MO here by shooting her because of her pluck and athleticism. So she probably was like trying to get away or mm-hmm. something and he and couldn't control back. Her.
On October 14th, a fifth body was found of Karen Beth Dinsfred, who was 28. She was again a sex worker who was addicted to cocaine and went missing after looking for Johns on Nebraska and Hillsborough Avenues. Her wrists were bound with a red bandana, and her legs and neck had been tied with a long, thick shoelace. She had been raped and brutally beaten on the head. Her yellow sweatshirt was pulled up to her head, exposing a bruised torso, and there were indicators that she had been dragged. She was only wearing the sweater, and the rest of her clothes were scattered nearby, but apparently her body was also covered by a blanket.
Interesting.
The cause of her death was strangulation. And again, she was identified by her fingerprints. But the investigation team actually knew her as she was a local sex worker and drug addict. So they kind of recognized her right away.
Yeah, which actually is probably sad, like, as a police officer to be able to recognize one of the people who come in.
Yeah. And again, red fibers were found on her body, along with brown pubic hair and semen with A and H blood substances.
I don't understand blood, so the blood substances either. Being, like, different doesn't make sense to me, but I don't know anything about it, so, like, it could make total sense, and I just am missing the point. On Halloween, a 71-year-old man clearing out a ditch found the remains of Kimberly Kyle Hoops, who is 22, and was also known as Sugar. And again, she was a sex worker with severe substance abuse issues. Her body was actually mummified when discovered, so it was difficult to tell when she had been killed and dumped here.
Which is crazy.
That is really strange to me, especially in Florida.
Yeah.
She was not ruled out of the investigation, but they didn't have a ton of evidence from this scene either because she was mummified. In fact, her identity was not discovered until much later when the killer was in custody. They found out that she had been strangled to death with the black cloth choker that she wore around her neck.
So then on November 6th, another body was discovered, and it belonged to Virginia Lee Johnson, who was only 18. A woman was out riding her horse on her ranch when she came upon the body. Body parts had actually been severed and scattered throughout the field. Medical examiners believe that she had been dead for about 2 weeks, and although the bones had been disturbed by animals, they could still tell that she had a violent death.
Yeah.
There was a 9-inch cord tied twice around her neck over a piece of cloth, and a thick shoelace bound her wrists together. The only thing she was wearing was a tank top. And there were no bullets or bullet wounds, so the cause of death was determined to be strangulation. And despite the dismemberment, there were still striking similarities between the case, as the victim was about 20 years old and about 5'5". She, too, was identified after the killer was apprehended.
On November 12th, a sign painter in Tampa came across another woman's body. The Tampa police called in the Hillsborough Sheriff's County office to take a look at the scene, and she had a leash-like noose around her neck and had severe rope burns on her body. Her face was severely beaten and her legs were spread apart for shock value. Her clothing had been thrown near her, and there was actually fecal matter on her shirt too. It was estimated that she had been dead for 2 to 3 days, and her cause of death was strangulation. In her jeans was a license for Kim Marie Swan, 21, and she was actually also a dancer at the Sly Fox Lounge, like the first found victim. And during this time, police are working very hard, obviously, and they are super worried as all of these deaths are occurring so closely together. And they are working with the FBI at this point, but the killer, like, is still eluding them with mm-hmm. all of this evidence. And this all changes when there is a survivor.
So, on November 3rd, Lisa McVeigh, who was only 17, so still a wee little baby.
Yeah.
Was grabbed off of her bike and tied up by someone hiding in the bushes along the road. She was on her way home from where she worked the night shift at Tampa's Krispy Kreme donut shop, and she was taken around 2 a.m. She said that he had a gun and a knife and that he quickly blindfolded her and forced her into his car. Lisa says that she was certain that he was meant to kill her. She begged him not to hurt her and that she would do whatever he wanted. He ordered her to remove her clothes in his car and perform oral sex on him. He drove her around for a while and eventually brought her back to his apartment where he kept her for 26 hours.
Can you imagine?
Right? Which this is like totally different from
everything else.
Everything else. Yeah.
Which I mean, we don't know that. he could be taking these women to his house before he kills them.
That is true.
You know, but it is really weird.
So while he's keeping her at his apartment, he repeatedly rapes her, sodomized her, fondled her, and forced her to perform sexual acts on him, and even made her shower with him.
Which is just weird. Yeah. I don't know why. That's just, like, really weird.
And he told her this whole time that he didn't want to hurt her. In a moment of, like, weird-ass kindness, when Long washed and brushed her hair, which, again, is weird.
Yeah.
Lisa asked him why he had done this to her. He blamed his hatred. He blamed it on his hatred for women. And she continued to listen to him talk about his problems. And she showed him sympathy and even offered to be his girlfriend. And she was like, I won't tell anyone.
Yeah, she like knew what to say mm-hmm. to get this man to not hurt her.
So during this time, Lisa tried to keep her mind as clear as possible despite being terrified. Later, she said that she was able to survive the attack mentally because she had been sexually assaulted by a family member. And so she was also able to talk him down from his rage like episodes he would get.
That's so sad that she was able to survive this attack because she had already been attacked.
Mm-hmm.
That's like one of... Sorry, that just really bummed me out yeah. hearing that because I didn't hear that before.
So, I mean, once you hear the very, very end, like what she's doing now, you're like, yeah, yeah. Lisa. But later during an episode of I Survive that she was on, she states that she'd actually been contemplating suicide just hours before she was abducted. And she'd actually like written a suicide letter and everything.
Oh, I think I have heard of this. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And she wanted to kill herself due to the years of emotional and sexual abuse at the hand of her grandmother's boyfriend. She is quoted as saying, I was deathly afraid that he was going to kill me. Here I was thinking about killing myself, and now I was going to be fighting for my life. Which is like a really powerful statement.
I know, I'm gonna like cry over here.
So at one point, he drove through an ATM to get some cash. So she kind of like quickly looked under her blindfold to try and memorize what the interior of the car looked like. And she noticed the word Magnum on the car's dashboard, which is actually unique to the 1978 model of the car.
Oh, fun fact.
Mm-hmm. She continued to get like quick glimpses as they arrived at a white stucco building with red steps. And she even counted the number of steps from the car to Long's residence. She also dropped a barrette next to the bed to prove that she had been there. And she said that she used her knowledge of crime shows that she had watched. So she's like an OG, like she def listens to true crime podcasts. So she knew that like she had to leave evidence behind. So she purposely left her fingerprints like in the car, in the bathroom, like everywhere that she could. Yeah. She was like, I'm going to touch everything.
Every time I hear about someone doing that, I'm like, you're so freaking smart. Right? And like, I probably wouldn't have the foresight in a really stressful situation to do that because I'd be so stressed out. And yeah. It's incredible that she was able to do that. So at one point during her capture, he fell asleep. And when he woke up, he told her that he now trusted her because she didn't flee. And he stopped calling her a bitch and started referring to her as babe instead. And he said to her, I wish I could keep you.
Which is the scariest thing because you don't know if he's going to let yeah. you go or if he's going to kill you.
He then took her back to his car where she knew this is the point where she would either live or die. And to her surprise, he stopped the car, told her to get out, and said, take care, which God. Is also super menacing for some reason.
But the relief.
Oh, yeah. He also instructed her to wait 5 minutes before taking off her blindfold so he would have enough time to get away. He dropped her off at a place by Hillsborough Avenue and Rome Avenue.
Which is like, I mean, I don't know back then, but now is like kind of busy or like pretty busy intersection. Like, so she's just kind of standing there, like, in a kind of busy part of town with a blindfold on.
Yeah, like, that's super weird.
I feel like someone would have stopped, but I don't know how it was in the 80s.
Yeah, that's very true. She later says that she talked about her father being terminally ill and wanted to see him again. And this may be one of the reasons why she was released. She made a compelling argument. Mm-hmm. She went home immediately, woke her father, and told him what happened, and he immediately called the police.
And also, I wanted to say, I don't think her father was actually terminally ill. She just, like, made it up.
Oh, did she? Mm-hmm. Okay. That's interesting, but also smart thinking.
I'm not 100%, but yeah. I think so.
She described him as a white male in his mid-30s, that he had a deep voice, his hair was brown, and had a layered cut to it. He also had thin eyebrows, a short mustache, big nose, small ears, and good teeth.
So, like, that's pretty descriptive.
Yeah. He was also compact but slightly overweight and had come across as feminine, which is interesting because of that
extra X chromosome.
Kleifner's whatever. Mm-hmm. I lost my place. Okay. She also told them about the gun. Described the car as a dark red or maroon two-door Dodge Magnum with a red steering wheel and dashboard with white seats and interiors. Got a great description of that car.
Amazing.
She unfortunately didn't remember anything about the carpet, but she remembered some things about the apartment, like where she had been raped, and tried to give the officers a hint of the location of the apartment in Bank, but being blindfolded really limited what she could see. And although the information wasn't perfect, this helped investigators a ton, especially the information about the car. Because that's like a very descriptive car, you mm-hmm. know, something you would notice. Lisa also wrote a book about this crime called Smoldering Embers about the case. And she would later say, I would say, thank you for choosing me and not another 17-year-old girl. Another 17-year-old girl probably wouldn't have been able to handle it the way that I have. I truly believe that all the abuse I've been through in my life helped me to get out of that situation.
Yeah. And it's like,
go ahead. Oh, I was just going to say, that's like a really nice way to look at the abuse you suffered your whole life.
Yeah. And like, when thinking about it, like, I forgot that she was 17, and then yeah. like being reminded of it, like, I'm like, God, that's such a baby. Because like,
I was an idiot at 17. I'm yeah. still an idiot.
Like, yeah, like when I was 17, I would have just like not known what the fuck to do.
Yeah.
So we're moving on to catching a killer.
Yes.
On the reports vary, but either November 15th or 17th of 84. Detective Wold and Helms were on cruise patrol in Tampa when they saw a red Dodge Magnum in the slow-moving traffic. They pulled the car over and checked his license. The man's name was Robert Joe Long, and his address matched the area that the police were searching for the killer's apartment. The interior of the vehicle also matched Lisa's description. And so, to keep it kind of nonchalant, they told him that they were looking for a robbery suspect and asked if they could photograph him, which he agreed to. The officer said that he looked visibly relieved when they let him go.
Which I'm sure he did.
Oh, yeah. The task force checked on his bank transactions, and he made one at the exact time that Lisa said her abductor did. So, like, she also remembered that.
Yeah.
They also looked into his criminal record and found that he was still currently on probation for an aggravated assault.
Yeah.
They put surveillance teams on him and tapped into his phone line. They also got a vehicular search warrant and an arrest warrant on the charges of kidnapping and sexual battery. They devised a plan to take him down, and they put four teams together: an arrest and security transport team, a vehicular seizure and search team, a residence search team, and a neighborhood survey team to interview Long's neighbors. So, he was swarmed with cops while walking out of a movie theater and immediately placed under arrest. In his car, they removed a sample of the right floor carpet to test the fibers, and it was confirmed to be a match of those tiny red fibers found everywhere.
Yes.
The car was disassembled to check for fibers from the victim's clothing or from the ropes, the victim's fingerprints, blood, or any other physical evidence. In his apartment, it looked just as Lisa has described, and they found her barrette. They also found photos of nude women, including photos that Long had taken of himself raping some of the victims. And there were pieces of female clothing inside as well, which means he was taking trophies.
So they got him pretty good there, I would say. So, during his interrogation, Long first confessed to his crimes against Lisa McVeigh. He initially denied involvement in the other murders, but after being told about the evidence the police had against him, partially the red fiber carpets from his car, he confessed. By the end of his interrogation, Long had been connected to 10 murders and Lisa's kidnapping and rape. A plea bargain was agreed upon where he pled guilty to 8 out of the 10 murders, and he did not plead guilty to the murders of Artis, is that what it is? Mm-hmm. Artis Wick and Vicky Elliott. He did acknowledge that he killed them, but since their bodies were not found until after his arrest, he apparently didn't have to plead guilty to them, which is super weird.
Yeah, I'm like, why? He still fucking said he did it.
Yeah, I guess maybe there wasn't enough evidence on those.
Yeah.
So maybe, like, it's one of those things where if they try him for all of the murders and 2 of them fall through, then he doesn't get charged for any of them.
That's true.
Something probably like that. At his trial in 1985, he received 26 life sentences for murder, rape, and kidnapping. These charges did include the rapes he committed as the classified ad rapist before he started killing as well.
Which is good that they, like, went back and got more stuff on him.
It is really good. He also received 7 life sentences with the possibility of parole after 7 years. But he went on trial in 1986 for Michelle Sims' murder and was sentenced to death, meaning he would obviously never get out. On February 24th, 1999, Long accused the Capital Collateral Regional Council, and that's the state office defending death row inmates and their appeals, of revealing his private letters to a book author, thus violating attorney-client privilege. He also accused the agency of running a death pool, betting on the dates on which inmates would be executed, and would be executed, and asked that the agency be removed from his case. But an investigation found that these allegations were false. In the end, according to the Florida Department of Corrections, Long had 1 5-year sentence, 4 99-year sentences, 28 life sentences, and 1 death sentence. So they really threw the book at him.
Oh, yeah. And he deserved them all.
I love. Mm-hmm. They usually don't get the book thrown at them like that.
So skipping forward to recent times, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signed Long's death warrant, which was the first one signed by the newly elected governor. On Friday, May 3rd, 2019, the Tampa Bay Times had an article saying that Long and his lawyer had skipped out on a court appearance.
Oh.
They argued that Long wanted to appeal his upcoming execution due to undue pain, whatever the fuck that is. I tried to look it up but couldn't.
It's just like a vague term that people like to use in law is what I've come to realize it is.
So his lawyer demanded that doctors review the drugs that would be used in his execution to show that sometimes the drugs used in the lethal injection process can be ineffective and cruel.
We recently talked about this.
Exactly. He probably used that article as research. But the families of his victims were pissed about Long wanting to find a painless execution method.
Yeah.
And Lula Williams, the mother of victim Chanel Williams, was at this hearing and told the media, quote, "He inflicted pain on my daughter and the other victims, and he's worried about pain? Me."
Fair point, though.
And on that day, May 3rd, 2019, Long was denied his stay of execution by Governor Ron DeSantis. Later that month, on May 23rd, Bobby Joe Long ate his final meal at 9:03 a.m. His meal consisted of roast beef, bacon, french fries, and soda.
Lots of meat.
Yeah, which is interesting for 9 o'clock in the morning, but yeah, you know, if it's your last meal. He was executed by lethal injection and pronounced dead at 6:55 p.m. He was 65 years old at the time and was one of Florida's longest serving inmates on death row. And he made no last statement.
Interesting.
Which I don't know why, but I really wanted to know what his last statement would
have
been.
Yeah, it's always interesting to hear those.
And for the silver lining of all of this.
Yes.
Bobby Joe Long's lone survivor, now Lisa McVeigh Nolan, since she has since been married.
Yeah.
Attended his execution and sat in the front fucking row.
Nice.
She pursued a career in law enforcement and is currently a deputy at the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office, which is the same office that brought Long to justice.
That's really nice. I like that. Mm-hmm.
She did later say of the execution, "I wanted to look him in the eye. I wanted to be the first person that he saw. Unfortunately, he didn't open his eyes." I said, like a pussy. But like, I love how she just grew up to be so strong.
And yeah, like, she is really strong.
That event in her life was traumatic and sucked, but it like probably is the reason why she went into law enforcement, right, and everything. And so a little silver lining.
Yeah, that is always nice when like there is some happiness to the story, you know?
Yeah.
And it's good to see that she's doing so well.
Well, I could go for some more happiness. Do you have a crazy Florida man for me?
I do. And I don't know why all of my Florida mans are like this, but they just are. And you're going to have to deal with it.
Okay.
This did happen on January 28th of 2020.
Okay.
Florida woman texts 911 multiple times to find out how to file for divorce. I don't know why I have so many calling and texting stories, but I love them and I think they're very funny. A Florida woman is accused of misusing the Largo, Florida 911 text messaging and calling system while seeking information on how to end her marriage. Police arrived at the residence of Sylvia Schumacher, 69, at 1:50 a.m. Friday morning, after she called and texted Largo's 911 emergency line 6 times from her cell phone to ask how to get a counselor and how to file for divorce.
I wonder if she thought if it was like 411 instead of 911.
Maybe. Could be. She was reportedly highly intoxicated during their arrival and subsequent interview, according to the police report. And it also states that officers had attended to a previous call by Schumacher related to her husband, which was deemed to be a non-criminal complaint as well. Officers witnessed Schumacher send further text messages to 911 in their presence, and she allowed officers to read the thread of text messages she'd send to 911.
That's amazing.
But when she was questioned, she insisted that 911 had actually texted her first out of the blue.
Me.
According, and this is on the police report.
I wish 911 would text me. Don't know why, but...
So, yeah, she was arrested and charged with one count of misusing that system. And apparently that is something that is only really in Pinellas County.
Yeah, I know it's in Broward County, too.
Yeah.
But, like, they're starting to get it. And it's supposed to be for, like, people, A, who are deaf and people who, like, you're in a situation where
you can't call. Yeah. That's really cool, though, because I think the last one I did was also from Largo as well. Mm-hmm. So these Largo people be misusing the fuck out of the texting option.
I don't remember all of it, so I'm obviously not going to do it as a future Florida man.
Yeah.
But I heard on the radio this week that there was a guy who was arrested for calling 911 multiple times like asking the different women operators if they wanted to get it on with him and fool around and stuff. And he was like an old guy.
That's the worst. Right? I hate that. Just don't be dumb about calling 911.
I know, because you can 100% get arrested for it.
As we've learned every time I tell you another story about right? it.
This should be a life lesson, guys.
Well, we hope that you guys liked this week's full out Florida week, because
yeah, we got real into Florida.
You got three different Florida stories up in this piece today. But do you want to tell them where they can reach us?
So you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, Gmail, Facebook, all at Crime Binge. And send us stories that you want to hear. Send us feedback.
Yeah.
Rate and review. We would love it.
Leave us that 5-star review.
Make us happy.
Us that you like it. And keep on binging. Bye.
See ya.